On Daf Kufchaf Beis Amid Beis, we saw the Mishnah at the beginning of Kol Kisve, of Kol Kalim, sorry, and now we're up to the Gemara. So the Gemara wants to know, in the first case of the Mishnah, when Isparku Adlosos, which means that the doors were removed from the Kalim, when did exactly that happen? So Gemara says, "Kol haKelim nitolim b'Shabbos v'dalsoseim imoyim afal pi shenisparku." It sounds like afal pi shenisparku b'Shabbos, that this heter to move the dalsos applies even though the dalsos were removed from the keli on Shabbos itself. The language of Afal Pishin Isparku goes back on Bishabis. So it says, Kol HaKelim Nitolim Bishabis, and we're going to read it Afal Pishin Isparku Bishabis. Now that means, Lo Mi Boy, it goes without saying that it's Mutal Letaltil Tlosos Shin Isparku Bechol, Adarabba, Im nisparku b'Shabbos, hayu muchanim uruim l'taltel b'knisa b'Shabbos al gabei aviyah. In other words, if you have a choice between two scenarios, one is where the delis was removed before Shabbos, and the one where the delis is removed on Shabbos, so then it makes more sense, intuitively, to say that what's closer to pshat, or a simple understanding, would be that going into Shabbos, this delis was part of a kli, and therefore it was muchan agav aviyah. In other words, it's part of a kli, and therefore it's muchan. I don't need a special heter tiltul in our Mishnah. You want to tell me a chiddush? Tell me a chiddush afal pi shenisparku bi chol bi erev Shabbos. So it's even if they were taken off before Shabbos, so going into Shabbos, they didn't have a status of a kli, they weren't part of the kli, and yet there's no iser muktzah. So the afal pishin isparku b'Shabbos is a problematic. It sounds like it goes without saying that if it was nisparik b'chol, it's mutter. I want to tell you, Chiddush, that even though it's nisparik on Shabbos, it's mutter, when the logic is just the reverse. So more answers, Amar Abaye, Hochi Koma, Kol HaKelim Nitolim b'Shabbos, Dalsosem Imonim, Afal Pishin Isparku, Bechol Nitolim b'Shabbos. So the Afal Pishin Isparku is not going back on b'Shabbos, the way we saw it, to tell me that even though it was taken off on Shabbos itself, it's Mutu B'Tiltul. On the contrary, we take those words, Afal Pishin Isparku, as if they were standing on their own. And the Chiddush is that even though Nisparku on Chol, nevertheless, Mutal Etaltalam on Shabbos, Nitolim B'Shabbos. Fine. Tanur Rabbanu, we learned in a Braisa, Delis Shel Shida V'Shel Teva V'Shel Migdal. So these are various types of cabinets. We'll call them trunks, closets, carriages. As the Braisa says, notlim, in other words, we can remove them from their hinges, which connect them to the kli, avalomach zirin, but on Shabbos itself, we're not allowed to reconnect them. V'shalul shel tarnagolus, the door of a chicken coop, and the chicken coop is considered mechubar lekarka, not like the shida tevo migdal. And there, in that case, is lo notlin v'lo machzir. Not only is it also to put to reconnect the door to its hinge, but you're not allowed to take it off. You're not allowed to even take it off because, since it's mechubar lekarka and it's binyan, so the flip side of binyan is melech asoser. and he would be chayv from leches soser. So the Gemara says, Bishleima, I understand shalul, shel tarnagolim, whether or not he's removing them or he's replacing them, it's asur to kasavar, because the Tana holds kevan de mechabri bi'ara, the lul is mechubil karka, is yesh binyan b'mechubil karka, yesh stira b'mechubil karka. But when it says dela shel shida v'shel teva shel migdal, that if it was removed, you're allowed, if you want to remove them, you're allowed to do so, you're just not allowed to replace them, that we don't understand. Maika sover, b'manav shach, it doesn't make sense. If he holds, as far as binyan v'kelim, is a major issue in binyan v'kelim, we had it in Perek Abone, that yesh binyan v'kelim, is then if yesh binyan v'kelim, yesh stira v'kelim. And if that be the case, how are you allowing him to remove the delis? That would be stira. So I understand very well why you're not allowed to replace it. That would be binyan if yesh binyan v'kelim, but why are you allowing me to take the door off its hinges? V'i, on the other hand, if you can tell me ein stira v'kelim, you're allowed to remove the doors because there's no such thing as stira v'kelim. Stira, like binyan, only applies to mechubil karka. These are kelim. Is ein binyan v'kelim? The flip side of that would be that there's no binyan v'kelim. So why can't you replace it? Omer Abayi li olam kasavar yesh binyan v'kelim v'yesh stira v'kelim. Ah, if that's the case, how is the Tana permitting you to take the delis off and detach it from its hinges? Is you have to read the word notlim as she nitlu ka'amar. In other words, what the Bryce is telling you is not notlim, because we're holding yesh stira v'kelim, so you're not going to be permitted to remove it, but nitlu, and the issue here is once it was taken off, in the case of Dela Shel Shida Teva Umigdal, and it's no longer connected to the Kli, the Chiddush of this Braisa is Ein Machzirit. You're not allowed to put it back on. Now, we're going to try to figure out what Abaye is really saying over here, because what's the difference between this Braisa? What's going to be the difference between notlin, which you're telling me that it can't be notlin because yesh stira v'kelim? Ella, what notlin means shen nitlu, and then you're going to tell me ein machzirin. So, what's the ein machzirin? Obviously, if yesh binyan v'kelim is ein machzirin. And so what's the contrast here between notlim, which you're telling me is shenitlu, and ein machzirin? So that the Gemara is going to try to analyze. So Amalei Rava asks, Abaye, he raises two objections. Shtei tshuvas v'dover. Chada, first I'm going to raise the following objection. Dini tolim ketani. It doesn't say nitlu, which means that the doors were removed, but rather it says nitolim, which means you're allowed to remove them. V'odin, furthermore, if you're right and the Braisa did not permit you to take off the delis from the kli, is my avalomach zirin? Why does the Braisa say avalomach zirin? Right? If he wouldn't have said notlim, then you could say, "Hare imlo amar mitchila notlim behiter nitilasam is lo shayach lomar avalomach zirin." The words avalomach zirin means that there was a heter, but not to replace it. It's the heter is only to remove it. And that's what it says, Aval lo machzir. And Aval sets up a contrast. And according to you, Abaye, there is no contrast here because you're not allowed to take it off. Just to the same extent you can't put it back on, you can't take it off. Call one stira and one binyan. So what's the Aval? Where's the contrast over here? Ela Amar Rava. Rava says, Kasavar ein binyan. V'kelim v'ein stir v'kelim, the exact opposite of Abaye. And therefore we can understand very well Nitolim, that you're allowed to take the losos and remove them from the hinges, because ein stir v'kelim. Ah, but it says also lachzirin, ein machzirin. That's a gzera. What are we afraid of? If we allow him to reattach the delis to the Shida Teva Migdal, then Shema Yitoka. What happens if, in attaching it, instead of just leaving it on its hinges, he might come to, you know, knock nails into it to make sure that it won't once again get removed, and then he violates a Malacha Doraisa. That's true even in the case of Kalim, even if I hold Ein Binyan B'Kalim. Now, what exactly is the Malacha Doraisa? So Rashi says, we're talking about Makah B'Patish. Rashi doesn't say that he be Chayav Mishum Malach as Binyan. The Ramban, on the other hand, says that Imi Toka Yavar Al Malach as Binyan. The Afal Pishayim Binyan B'Kalim Yikom Kom Kevon Kasher Ose Kli Meikoro Yesh Bo Iser Bone. Shazai ain't a binyan big kalim, el binyan kalim, el asias kalim. And here in this case, if he would knock in a nail, then he'd be creating a kalim. And creating a kalim is a malach of binyan. Rashi says we're talking about makom patish. So that's what we have over here. And I want to go back to Abaye. Now, the Kash of Rava seems to indicate that Abaye is not changing the girsa. He's only explaining what happens over here in this price. Instead of interpreting as notlim, you have to interpret as nitlu ka'amar, to which Rava raises his objection. Now, if Abaye himself had the girsa as we have it and as Rava has it, that's notlim, how did Abaye understand the word notlim if he had that girsa? And he says nitlu ka'amar, it was already taken off. So we have here Tosis Divra Masali Olam. Abaye, he says Tosis, had a different girsa. It should read Deles Shalshida Vishal Teva Vishal Migdal Nitolim. Not Notlim, but Nitolim. The truth is that's only a difference between a Vav and a Yud, meaning instead of Notlim, change the Vav of Notlim to a Yud. So Rava bases his kash on the fact that the real girsa, the right girsa, should be Notlim, not Nitolim. Now, Abaye's girsa in the Braisa, let's just think. According to Tosfos, Abaye's girsa was what? Was Nitolim. Rashi says that Abaye has the same girsa that Rava had, Notlim. And somehow, according to Rashi, Abaye understood that Nitolim is, well, what's the pirush of Nitolim? So you add a hey and it becomes Hanitolim. So this is fascinating, because what it means is shenitlu v'nisparku, and what we're saying is that if it's hanitolim, then it's mutter. So hanitolim, I guess, somehow is a mitigating factor here. So I'm simply not sure here what Abai's answer is, if he's not changed to the girsa, and how notlim is interpreted as nitolim, and the fact it's nitolim, what significance does that have? I could just tell you this, that Tosfos understands Abaye shenitlu ka'amar, which means the Bryce is talking about a case that he already removed the dalsos from the kelim, and the Bryce wants to tell you nitolim means mutal taltalam. We're not talking about replacing them, because that would be an iser of binyan, but we're talking about moving them. And the chiddush of the Braisa according to Abaye is that ein bahem iser muktza. In the case of a delis of a chicken coop, which is mechubel karka, even after it's removed, there's an iser tiltal, and that applies to dalsel sabayis. And even if this is, as Tosfos presents it, Abai's understanding of the Braisa, so we still understand Rava's objection, because the language of notlin doesn't sound like a lushan of tiltal. It sounds like a lushan of netila. Netila means taking it off, not moving it. Which sounds like you're allowed to take it off, and then Rav is forced to insist that this price reflects the shita that ain binya b'kelu. Okay, let's go on in the Mishnah. Notel adam kurnus lefatzeh bos hagozim. So we said that even though it's a klishim lachtel isur v'letzor kufo, it's mutter. So he's taking the sledgehammer in order to crack his nuts. He's Om Rav Yehuda, when the Mishnah is matir tiltel of a kurnus shel hagozim, so that according to Rav Yehuda, here Rav Yehuda in the Gemara, the Mishnah is not going to allow you to use a sledgehammer to break nuts, but rather we're talking about a kurnus shel egozim. Now, if it's a kurnus shel egozim, so then it's a klishim lachta leheter. So what is the Mishnah telling me? What chiddush when it says lefatzea bo esha gozim? I mean, that's exactly what the kli is used for, and it's heter. Unless we say the following, that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the way we're going to read this Mishnah is that kurnus lefatzeh gos hagozim is only mutter because it is a kurnus shel hagozim, and the chiddush of the Mishnah is to limit the heter, and by implication prohibit the case of a aval shel nafachim, of a kurnus that's used by the blacksmiths, which is a klishim lachto le'isur, is low. That we're not going to allow. Why? Because Rav Yehuda holds davishim lachto le'isur afilu tzor gufo asur. So the heta that we're more familiar with is that a klishim lachto le'isur is mutter le'tzor gufo, and Rav Yehuda rejects that. Again, we're going to have to see, as we'll soon see, how does Rav Yehuda go forward in the Mishnah? The whole list of the Mishnah seems to be addressing a klishim lachto le'isur, which is mutter letzar gufo. Amale Rabba, so Rabba answers, raise the kasha to Rav Yehuda, elamayata, according to your logic, if the Mishnah is only being allowing you to be metaltel what's called a klishim lachto heter, is take a look at the kelim in our Mishnah. Seifa de katani, he could have given any number of examples, but let's take this one. Ve'es harachas V'yes amalgeis loses olav lekatan. Now these kelim, rachas and malgeis, are classic klisha malachta leiser, and the Mishnah is yet allowing it loses olav meichel lekatan, using it as a plate to feed. So you can't tell me we're talking about kelim miuchadim lemelechas heter. Because rachas umalgeis mi miyachte le lekatan, are you telling me that people will use these utensils for as a fork? You know, we're talking about a gigantic pitchfork, and you're going to use it now to feed a katan? Certainly, it's only miyuchad lemeleches iser, and yet this shovel or pitchfork is allowed to be used to put food on a plate for a child. It must be that letzar kufo is mutter, even though it's a klisha malachta leisa. Eloma Rabba. Rabba is going to tell you that that's not the way I want to read the Mishnah of kurnus, but rather kurnus shel nafachim. We're talking about the blacksmith's hammer and lefatzeh bo'es hagozim, and you're allowed to crack nuts with it, because Rabba holds, and here we'll turn to Kuf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, davar shemalachta le'isur is letzar gufo mutter. So that's the shita of Rabba, as opposed to the shita of Rav Yehuda. Klisha malachta leiser is mutl tzar kufa. Esrei abayi l'rabba. What are we going to do with a braisa that says medocha? Medocha is a large kli that's used to crush, let's say, garlic. Anyway, crushing garlic is called meleches tochen. And comes under what we call shchika samimonim, and it says about this madocha that im yesh bashum metaltelinosa. That is garlic inside this madocha, this grinder. So, Vaistois im lav, it doesn't have any garlic in it, ein metaltenosa. So that we have a problem here in Abaye, because why can he use it litzar gufo? Omalei, so Rabba responds to Abaye, hanami, this brisa should be attributed to Rab Nechemya. He, the Omer ain't clean nital el litzorech tashmisho. That's, he rejects this whole idea that you could use it litzorech gufo. He holds that you're only allowed to use a kli or move a kli for the sake of its primary purpose, for which it was singled out, it was created, it was manufactured, but not for other usages. So even according to Ibn Kabi, even in a case of klisha malachta leheter, there's a very limited use of that kli, and for that matter, moving the kli around. There's only mutter if you're using it for that purpose for which it was designated. So the braisa therefore says that it's asur letaltel madocha, because he wants to use it for some other tashmish, some other purpose. And you're only allowed to use it for tashmisho amiyuchad lo, according to Rav Nechemya. We don't pasuk like Rav Nechemya, we pasuk like the Chachamim, who rejected Rav Nechemya. And they are matir tiltul of any kli, even if it's shalo letzor tashmisho. And therefore, according to that sheet of the Chachamim, it would be mutav di metalta l'klisha malachta l'isa l'tzorech tashmish heter begufo. So we're going to paskin like the Chachamim, and if you use it l'tzorech gufo, then it's mutav b'tiltul. And the reason for that is because it becomes like a tzorech heter. It's not a klisha malachta l'isa anymore, it's like a klisha malachta l'heter. Now Abaye raises an objection to Rabba. We have a mission in Beitza, Beit Shammai Omrim Ein Notlin Es Hali Lekatzev Olav Basar Ubeisil Matirim Vishavim Shem Kitzev Olav Basar Sha'asa L'Taltula. Now, when it says Ali, which is Beit Shammai says Einot Lenes Ali, says Kemin Yad Eitz Gadol V'Agul. So it's like a round, shaped like a hand, I guess, a round, wooden utensil. And he says, "Makimbo es al achitim shebmachteshes." Ah, so this is something called a pestle, and you use it to chop meat. So the question is, are you allowed to take this pestle to chop meat? Beit Shammai says it's asur, and Beit Hillel says it's mutter. Okay, so Menachem, let's just read this one more time. And we're talking about Ktishas Chitim. And he has this kli, which he used, Makimbo al Achitim Shemachteshes. And Beit Shammai say, you're not allowed to use this kli lekatzev olav basar. I guess if I'm imagining this kli, I don't have a picture of it, but it must be a kind of a flat, whitish surface. Otherwise, how is he cutting meat on it? And it seems we're talking about yontif, because this is a mission in Beitza. And Beit Shammai is saying that it's a kli shemalach talisa because it's used as a machteshes to grind meat. Or I should say, actually, to grind kernels of wheat. And Beit Hillel say it's okay. Maybe because it's Simchas Yontif. In any event, the Braisa comments on this mission of Vishavim, that Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai agree, Shem Kitzev Olav Basar. If he's already used it and he prepared all the meat that he needs, so he, you know, if he's cutting meat, it's not Litzarch Yontiv anymore, so Litaltalo. Now, as Beit Hillel only matir it Litzarch Simchas Yontiv. But we see that a Klisha Melachtalis is also Litaltalo, even Litzarch Gufo. This is Akasha on Rabba. Because again, he's using it to cut his meat on it. So the Gemara tells us that Sovar Rabba thought Lishnuyele to deflect Abai's objection by saying that this brisa that prohibits tiltul of a klishamach l'iser, even if it's a tzar kufo, that should be attributed to Rabbi Nechemiah, who requires a kli. It requires tzarech tashmish amiyuchad lo. But came unto Shami lehod yomer of chinuna bar shlomi mishnei de rav. When he heard in the name of Rav, hakol, meaning even the chachamim that rejected Rav Nechemiah, they allow you to be metal to the kli, even shalol letzarech tashmish amiyuchad lo, but modim besiche. Or Ziyare, or Mizore, these are various kalim that are used by dyers to dye clothing. shasurim b'tiltul, and the reason for that is kevan dekapet alayu. I mean, these are kelim that are used by an uman, by a professional. He's very makbid that it shouldn't be bent out of shape. Is miyachad lumakom, and he sets up a place, locks it up. No one's allowed to take it out. That's called makze biyadayim, and no one should be metaltel it. And therefore, it's also metiltel even litzar gufo. So these are very sensitive and expensive kelim, and that's mukze machmas. Chisarin kiss is therefore, Rabbi says, I don't have to introduce Rabbi Nechemia into the picture to explain this brisa. I can tell you that even if this brisa reflects the shita of the Chachamim, but hani nami, these particular utensils, which you call the Ali and the Maducha, it has a certain sensitivity, a certain choshev, and miyachle mokom. And therefore, it becomes a kli of chisaron kis, and therefore it's also betiltel. And when we say that it's also betiltel, it means even litzarach gufo. Now, if we want to talk for a moment about these various kelim that were mentioned here in Rav's list of siches yorei Umizore, let's just translate this into English. He's got a spindle, he's got a clothes press and a mallet. Okay? Spindle is sichi, which are long spokes that are used to comb out silk fiber. Ziore is clothes presses, which are wooden beams that are used to press clothing with their weight. And mizore or mallets are wooden sticks that are used to beat clothes during the cleaning process. Now, although Rashi says that these utensils are used by dyers, Rashi doesn't specify their function, but it seems like these are not only exclusively used by dyers. I mean, you're talking about pressing clothing, cleaning clothing. I'm not sure if that's the same as dyers. Even the spokes that are used to comb out silk fiber, I don't know if, you know, that sounds more like meleches ariga or kibus in these cases than tzovea. But in any event, even the Rabbanim who reject Rav Nechemia, they agree that these utensils may not be moved for Shabbos, even for the sake of Gufo. And the reason is because he doesn't allow anyone to use these utensils for anything other than what they're specified for. And he designates it and sets it aside, which is called Makzeh B'Yadayim, and this is Muktzah Machmas Chisaron Kis, which is a very severe category of Muktzah, and it generates an Isur Muktzah even if he wants to use it Litzar Gufo. So in light of that, our Braisa, in the case of the mortar and the pestle, we don't have to attribute it to Reb Nechemia. Rabbi says we can talk about it as Kalim that are specifically singled out and designated for an intended purpose, for one use. He stores it away in a designated place, and he's makzeh b'yadayim, and therefore it's not even mutl tzar gufo. Now, we had amoraim in terms of the heter of a mishnah in taltal akurnis for ptsias agozim. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's only a kurnish al agozim, which is a klishim lach lehet. According to Rabba, it's even a kurnish al nefachim, which we said is a klishim lach li iser. So itmar, we learned in the base medrash, Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Omar, Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, kurnish al zahavim. So this is a goldsmith's hammer. And we're going to tell us in our Mishnah that you're allowed to use it lefatzeach gozim. And the question is here, lechora, the owner of such a kurnis of zahovim is makpid that it shouldn't be used for other malachos. And he needs it, it's a very important kli that he needs for what's called ridud tasei zav, to smoothen out some sort of a plain surface of gold. And apparently, despite the fact that it's a special, unique kind of a kli, but nevertheless, he's not makatza also, he doesn't exclude it from anything else. Maybe it's a kli that could be fixed, and therefore, he can use it even the fatzea egozim. But Rav Shemin bar Abba Omar kuna shel besamim shaninu. Our mission is not talking about a kurnus of zahovim, of the goldsmiths, but rather of basamim, which are those people who make spices, the spice makers' hammers. And even though you would think that a person who owns such a kurnus shel basamim would be makpid, that it shouldn't be used for other malachos, it should stay clean, it shouldn't be, because he wants to use it for besamim and sell these besamim. But nevertheless, you're allowed to use them for another purpose, like to break open nuts. So basically, if you have a kurnus shel nefachim, where I don't think there's that much kpeda about this hammer that's used by blacksmith, then he's certainly not makatze biyadai. So right now, it would seem that both Rabbi Chiya bar Abba in the name of Rav and Rav Shemin bar Abba would agree in the case of kunas shel nefachim, if he's not makatze it midaito, and if he's not makta a kurnish al zahavim or a kurnish al b'som kalvachom, he's not makta a kurnish al nefachim, it shouldn't be, again, it might be a klisha machtalisa, but it shouldn't be also litzar kufo. And these shitas would seem, at the face of it, to be matir, like Rabba, a klisha machtalisa litzar kufo. Now, let's get down to the specifics here of Rav and Rav Shemin. Mandi Omer, according to Rav Shemin, if we're talking about a kurnis of the basamim, so that there is a certain element of kpeda here, you can't deny it, he doesn't want to use it for other purposes, it'll get filthy, it'll get, it'll be ma'us for basamim. And yet, nevertheless, even though there is an element of kpeda, we're going to say that it's mutar, according to Rav Shemin, is kolshkin, how much more so in the case of the goldsmith's hammer, where there's much less of a kpeda. As we said before, it's very easy to fix it. So for sure, that would be mutar. But let's take it the other direction. Let's start with Rav is talking about, I'm sorry, I keep saying Rav when I mean Rav Yochanan, that Rav Yochanan is talking about a kurnish al zahavim, and there's not such kpeda for that, because he can fix it if it gets a little bit bent out of shape. Aval, a kurnish of basamim, kapit alayu, there would be kpeda. Because, as we said before, he doesn't want to get it in any way disgusting, so he can't use it for chopping up the spices. And therefore, he's very particular about it, and he sets it aside for Shabbos use. It shouldn't become repugnant. So that there is here a machlokes between Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Shemin, and it's Rabbi Yochanan who's the Machmir, and Rabbi Shimon is the Mekil. Because if Rabbi Shimon will allow a Kurnishel Besamim, Basamim, which is a spice maker's hammer, which crushes spices, and he says that even though he's particular about this hammer, he doesn't want to use it for anything else, nevertheless, he's going to say that it's not mukta, meaning it's not mukta machmas kisarim kis, and he can use it as any klisha malachta lisa litzar gufo. So then how much more so, he would certainly not consider a goldsmith's hammer to be mukta. Because there it's less prone to ruination, he can fix it, he can flatten it out, and certainly that would be okay for Litzorech Gufo. Good. So it's only Rav Shemin who's going to be Machmir in the case, it's only Rav Yochanan who's going to be Machmir in the case of a Kurnish Shel Basamim. Now the Mishnah mentions Kush and Karkar, which we said are a spindle or a weaver's reed, and he wants to use it to spear fruit. Tanu Rabbanan Paga Shetmona Beteven. So now we're talking about a fig that is not yet ripen completely. So what he does with it in order to speed up the process of ripening is he submerges it in straw. And now the question is, if it's submerged in straw, and that's what he did before Shabbos, then the question is, is he allowed to pull it out? Because inevitably, if he pulls out the pagor, which is Roy Lachil, it's not Mukta, he's going to be moving the straw. The straw is Mukta. Similar case, the Brisa has Charora, which is a kind of a cookie that's made from like a bread over the barbecue, Tmano B'Gecholim, and it's now submerged under the coals, and that's Mukta, the coals are Mukta. So the Brisa says, are you allowed to get access to the Paga? Or to the Charora, it depends. Imagula Miktsasa, if part of the fig or the Charora is exposed above the level of the Mukta, is Mutala Taltala. And even though inevitably by being Metaltalit, the Tevin is going to shake around, the Gecholim are going to shake around, but it doesn't matter, that's already considered Tiltul Menatzad, that's indirect Tiltul, and that's Mutta. But in Lav, if he's going to have to directly move the Mukta in order to get access to the Pagor, or to the Charora, because they are totally submerged, then also the Taltul, according to the Tanakhama, this price, it's also. However, Rabbi Lozer ben Tidoi Omer, even in the case where the Pag of the Charora totally submerged in the Tevin or in the Gecholim, there is a solution to the problem. Tochavim Bekush O Bekarkar. So you can use that spindle and spirit Vehem Minu Oros, and it'll automatically shake off the Tevin and the Gecholim Me'aleihem. So then even though he's in effect being metaltal the Tevin and the Gecholim, but nevertheless that's also considered Tiltul Min Atzad. Now, it would seem that both the Tanakhama and Rabbi Elazar ben Tadoi agree that to some extent we could be Matir Tiltul Min Atzad. But the question is, what is considered Tiltul Min Atzad? In other words, the Tanakhama is going to require a Nishmat Me'elov, to call it an indirect tiltal, it's going to have to be nishmat me'elav. And that's the case of megula, right? Megula b'miktsasa. So that's called nishmat me'elav. In the case where it's totally submerged, the Tanakhama would say that that's asur to poke it and spear it, because that's already a different type of tiltul min atzad. That's the real tiltul min atzad, which is only mutter according to Rabbi Lazar. So you're actually shaking mukta, and according to Tanakhama, that's asur. So that if we summarize here, we have this foodstuff that is completely submerged into mukta, and here we have machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Lazar ben Tidoi. Whereas the Tanakhama would say it's asur to take this kush, this spindle, and spear it to lift it up, Rabbi Lazar would be matir it. Because Rabbi Lazar holds that it's not direct. In other words, he's not actually lifting the mukta. He's really just removing that which is not mukta. Again, you can't deny that he's, to some extent, he is lifting the mukta. But you can define his action as an action being done on the non-muktzah. And Omar Rav Nachman, halacha ki Rabbi Lozer ben Tadoi. He's going to accept this kula, this permission of Rabbi Lozer ben Tadoi. L'meimet desav Rav Nachman, tiltul min atzad, lo shmei tiltul. And this is considered an indirect movement of mukta, which according to the Chachamim is asur, and Rav Nachman is accepting Rav Lozer and it's mutter. Again, we have to emphasize that in the case of paga, which is megula v'miktsasa, even the Chachamim allow you to pick up the fig, but that's because of a tiltul me'elav. That's not tiltul min atzad. The Omar Rav Nachman, what do we do with another statement of Rav Nachman? Hai pugla, if you have now, instead of a fig, we have now a radish, okay? Now the radish is buried in the ground, it's already been detached, and they preserve it in the ground, it's partially exposed, then milamala lamata shari, mimata lamala osir. In other words, in what direction is this radish lying? Is it right side up or upside down? If it's right side up, then there's an exposed part of the radish and he's allowed to lift that out of the ground. But in a case where it's upside down, then it's asur. And that, why is it asur? That should be tiltul min atzad, even if it's upside down. In other words, again, the radish was removed before Shabbos. So we don't have any kind of tlisha issue. It's not growing from the ground. But we have an issue of moving the earth, which is mukta. So if the top of the radish is, let's say, wider than the bottom, and therefore when the radish is buried right side up, the top of the radish is exposed, and in such a case, when he takes hold of the wide top and he lifts it up from the narrow pattern, from the narrow bottom, then he's basically not moving the earth. But if it's buried upside down, so the narrow part, which is the bottom of the radish, is exposed on top, then when he lifts it, he's automatically lifting some of the earth that's resting on the wider top, the lower wider top. When I say lower in this situation, that's upside down. Now he's indirectly moving the earth, and yet Rav Nachman prohibits it. And the Gemara is forced to assume now, Hoder Bei Rav Nachman Ahi, that Rav Nachman changed his mind and he retracted his original ruling. Now, which ruling is he retracting? The one about the fig or the one about the radish? So the implication that you get here from the Gemara is that he retracted his ruling regarding the radish. And in fact, he accepted the shita of Rab Loza ben Tadoi that tiltum and atzad is mutter in the case that we discussed earlier of the fig. Now we get to the mishnah about machat shel yad litolbos coats. So we're talking about using a needle to remove a splinter. Shalach le rava. One second, let me just turn the page here. Sholach be le rava bre de rava le rav Yosef l'amdenu rabbeinu machat shenital charora. So we're talking about a machat that has no eye. So you can't put the thread through the eye. O uktsa, or the pintala, that sharp end of the needle, was removed. Mao, what's the status in terms of tiltal Shabbos? Does it have a shem kli, and there is mutter betiltal, or does it not have a shem kli, and it's muktzah? Omalei Rav Yosef Tenisua, we learned it in our Mishnah, machat shel yad lito basa kotz. In other words, that the removing of the splinter is a tashmish which allows you to be metaltel lemachat. V'chima ichpas le lekotz bein nekuva levein she'ena nekuva. In other words, it's if you're allowing for the sake of this tashmish of removing a splinter, what difference does it make whether this needle has an eye or doesn't have an eye? Even if it doesn't have an eye, it still is fit for removing a splinter. You don't need the eye of the, you know, the eye is necessary for sewing, but not for purpose of removing a splinter. And therefore, it still has a shem kli, it still has a function, and it's mutter betiltal. Eisvei, so Rava asks a kashan Rav Yosef from a mishnah in Kelim, and the mishnah says that machat shenital chararo okta tahora. In other words, the tumah of a keli is completely removed, it's gone with the wind, up in smoke, so to speak, because they removed the part of that needle that makes it functional, whether it's the sharp point at the end, or whether it's the, you know, on the other end of the machat, the charora, meaning the eye of the needle was removed, it's no longer functional. So therefore, if it doesn't have a shem kli as far as Tuma Vitara is concerned, it should be also betiltal. And the underlying assumption of Rava is that we have an absolute equation here between the shem kli as far as Kabbalah's Tuma and as far as tiltal b'Shabbos. Omar Abaye. So Abaye says to Rava, Tuma Shabbos Karamis. You are assuming an equation analogy between the shame kli for tuma and the shame kli of Shabbos. That's the underlying premise of your equation. Well, I have news for you. As far as tuma is concerned, the Torah says kli masa, and that's in Bamidbar Lamed Aleph, in the parasha of Kli Midjan, and it says there kli masa. Be'inon. That's what we require. We need a kli masa, which means that its original creation, its manufacture, its intention, what it was designated for, is still functional. But if it's broken and now you want to use it for a different tashmish, well, that's not called kli masa. That's not the original masa. So in the case of the machet, if one part of the machet was removed, it's no longer re'uya, it's no longer suitable for its original malacha, and therefore it's not mekabel tuma. But linyan Shabbos, Shabbos gives you a broader scope definition of a kli as far as the head to tiltul, meaning the chazi bin. And all we need is that this object could have some function. We're going to talk later about shards, broken pieces of earthenware. They still have a function. They could cover something. Hanami chazil mishkala bakotz, and here too, even after you remove the eye of the needle or the point of the needle, it still has a function. You can remove a splinter. And therefore it has the same kli as far as Shabbos is. Because again, in Tumah V'Tara we have a special requirement for Tumah V'Tara that it's only Mekabel Tumah, it's a kli masa. So we need the original function, that it's still possible. Tashmisho Arishon Adayin Kayim Bo. It's royal Tashmisho Arishon. That's a special halacha in Tumah V'Tara. Rava rejects Abaye. Omar Rava, Man Dika Mosiv, the one who raised this objection to Rav Yosef, right? Rav Yosef was matir tiltul on Shabbos in a machat whose eye or point was removed, and that was actually Rava Berei de Rava, not to be confused with this Rava that we're learning about. Is Shapir Kamosif? His question was an excellent question, because he was right, Rava Berei de Rava, by assuming an analogy between Tumah and Shabbos. If it's not a shame kli for Tumah, then it's not a shame kli for Shabbos, and therefore hence the machat, when its eye was removed, even though it's fit for a different function of removing a splinter, it is no longer a kli. And basically, according to Rava, we have an equation now. And Meisve, the Gemara is going to ask an objection on Rava from a Braisa. Machat, bein nekuva, bein she'en nekuva, mutal letaltal b'shabes. V'lo omru nekuva, el inyan tumulvad. The requirement that it has to have an eye to the needle is a requirement in Hilchas Tumah. In other words, in the case of an Eina Nekuva, because the chur shalamacha was removed, as far as Tumah, it's batul min shem kli. But as far as Shabbos is concerned, even if it's Eina Nekuva, and the eye of the needle was removed, it's mutar betiltul. And that's exactly what Rav Yosef and Abai, for that matter, were maintaining, that there's a difference, a fundamental difference between Kabbalah's Tumah and Shem Kli Linyan Muktzah. And this is against Rava, who equates Shabbos and Tumah. So the Gemara answers, Tirguma Abaye Aliba de Rava. Abaye wants to give an answer for this Braisa to defend Rava, the intellectual honesty of Abaye. Begolme Askinon. The Braisa is talking about a case of Golme Machtim. In other words, we're talking in the manufacturing process. We're still in raw material. That's called golme. And we haven't gotten to the point in which we have punctured that hole to make the eye of the needle. So that nekuva, if there was an eye in the needle, is called nigmara malachta. If it's ena nekuva and you haven't yet gotten to the end of the process of manufacturing, and the eye of the needle has not been punched out, then lo nigmara malachta. And here's where the Braisa sets up a difference, a contrast between Shabbos and Tumah. As far as Tumah is concerned, if the machat is eno nekuva, which means that it hasn't been completely manufactured, it's still in a raw material state, it's not called a kli, because the Torah requires, as we saw in the parasha of Midyan, it says kli masa. And masa means to complete the masa, to complete the manufacturing process. As far as tiltul muksa, the Shabbos is concerned, even if it's eino nekuva, it's mutar the tiltul. And why is that so? Zimnin de mimlach alayu mashvi le mona. perhaps in the course, in the process of the manufacturing, and he hasn't yet gotten to the point at which he punches out the hole in the eye of the needle, he had a change of heart, and he decided that, you know what, I'm going to use this to remove a splinter. So that's enough to redesignate the function of the object and give it a shem kli, and therefore it's mutar b'tiltul on Shabbos. But if you're talking about Tumah v'Tara, then the Braisa sets up this contrast, because although he changed his mind, but nevertheless in the manufacturing process, since this was intended and designated to be a machat for sewing purposes, then to make it into kli masa, as the Torah calls it, you need to finish the manufacturing process. And that's a unique halacha in Tumah v'Tara. Aval hecha, but what happens in a case where you had a machat that was completely, that's its manufacturing process was absolutely complete, and it had already a punched hole in it, but nital charoru uktza, then something broke off, and there's no longer an eye or a point to this needle, is then it loses its shame kli in an objective way, because derech adam lezorka lebein hagrutos, you know, he takes it and he throws it into the rubbish, and it's batul mimenu kli legamrei, and that would apply whether or not we're talking about Tumah, or we're talking about the Issur Tiltul on Shabbos. And here's where Rav is correct, that if you already have a completely manufactured needle, and now you break it off and it's no longer functional, and people would now throw it into the rubbish, in such a case, it's an absolute equation here between Shabbos and Muktzah. I'm sorry, between Muktzah on Shabbos and Tumah v'Tara. And therefore, Rava was right when he said that a machat which has been broken is muktzah against Rabbi Yosef because of the equation to Tumah v'Tara. That a machat shenital charor, after it was completely manufactured, it's tahora. On that, Rava is telling you that to the same extent it's tahora because it lost its shem kli, it is muktan shabbos. Now the Gemara brings a machlokas about the din of removing a splinter on Shabbos. Asuve yinuka, Rav Nachman osar v'Rav Sheshes Shari. Now we're talking about a tinok, and we're talking about the bones or the limbs of a tinok. When it's very often, never when a baby is born, the in the process of birth, or maybe even before that, the parts, you know, I don't want to use the word organs of its body. The limbs of its body, maybe that's a better word. Anyway, they were dislocated, let's assume during the birth process, and he wants to straighten it out. And there's a process by which he can straighten it out. So Rav Nachman says that this process is called repairing a human being, and it's similar to repairing a utensil, and it's a malacha of makah b'patish, and you're not allowed to do this. I'm assuming there's no pikuach nefesh here. We'll get back to that. But Rav Sheshes holds that this is not called repairing. There's no makah b'patish here. He's saying he's not using any medicinal remedy, and therefore this is mutter. So mimonafshach is mutter. It's not makah b'patish according to Rav Sheshes, and it's not under the isur d'rabbanan of refuah b'shabbos, and therefore mimonafshach, it is mutter. Omer Rav Nachman Minah Midale, from whence did I derive my conclusion that this kind of tikkun aguf of gufo shel adam is asur? This nan, we have a Mishnah later on. Ein osin, here we're going to turn to daf kuf chav gimel mit beis, apik trizon b'shabbos. So these are are kinds of liquids that if a person has something very bad going on inside his stomach, he's got to vomit it forth. So he takes these kinds of drinks as a therapeutic method, and that comes under the Iser of Refuah B'Shabbos. And we see clearly that repairing one's body by taking this kind of emetic is prohibited. And therefore, to repair the infant by straightening its limbs would also be prohibited. And that's called Tikkun HaGuf. Rav Sheshes says, no. Hasam lav urche. There it's clear that he's using a method which is therapeutic. It's not a normal thing to drink this kind of concoction, this kind of emetic, excuse me. And if it's not part of a person's normal conditioning, then it certainly comes under the Isur Refuah. But Hacha, here in the case of straightening the limbs, is Urche. It's considered Darko Shel Odom Bekach. And therefore it's not similar to the case of Apoktizrin. It's like eating and drinking. You know, sometimes you can eat and drink and it's healthy, but that doesn't mean it's also B'Tars Refuah. What's my source for allowing Sidur Evrei Aguf, Sidur Evrei Tinok? This Nan, we learned in the Mishnah back on Daf Kufchav Beis, Machat Shal Yad, Lito Basa Kotz, that you're allowed to use a needle on Shabbos, which is a Klishim Lachtol Iser, to remove a splinter. So we see that the Chachamim did not prohibit Tikkun Aguf. In other words, if it's not a refuah in the classic sense, he's just removing a splinter, that's not called refuah, then even though he's being metakin his guf, that's mutter. And the sidur evrei atinok is the same as taking a coats out. So the Gemara rejects this. Rav Nachman, he's going to say, don't prove anything from the heter of coats to be mater tikkun aguf. The hasam, there in the case of a coats, pocket. Hacha, low pocket. In the case of a coats, the coats is not really attached to the body. It's, shall we say, deposited in the body. But it's not in the basar in such a way that now the basar of the body is in a bad state of kilkul and you need a tikkun. So the taking out of a splinter, removing a splinter, does not constitute tikkun aguf. But hacha, here in the case of sidur evrei atinok, low pocket, right, the avarim are not deposited, but rather they are the goof itself. They are parts of the goof. And when you reorganize the parts of the limbs of the body, that no doubt is called tikkun aguf, and it's also because it is a kind of makah b'patish. So this leads us to the Mishnah here of Kaneshel Zesim. And we're going to try to clarify the heter of tiltul with regard to a Kaneshel Zesim. And this is a cane for turning olives. In other words, after the harvest of the olives, they're stored in a vat, and they soften until they're ready for pressing. So they use the cane to turn over the olives in the vat, in order to examine them to see if they were ready. So it's called Hafichas Hazesim Atzvurim B'Maton, which is a kli. K'dei Livdok Im Kvar B'Shelim Uruyim L'Schitas Shemen B'Beis Abad. So what's the status of this Kaneh Shel Zesim? Im Yesh Kesher B'Rosh. If there's some sort of a plug, a knot, let's say, and it's at the end of this Koneshel Zesim is Mekabel Tuma. And we'll see that if it's Mekabel Tuma, that means that it is a Kli. and therefore it's mutter betiltel on Shabbos. Im lav, but if there's no knot at the end of this cane, then ain't a makabel tuma, and it's not called a kli. Now this cane apparently has a hollow to it, and it's closed at each end, either by inserting a plug, as we said before, or a knot. The cane is considered a kli with regard to tumah. Now, if the cane is open at its end, and it doesn't have this kesher, then it's not considered a kli. Okay, we're going to have to see why, but that's going to be the sugya sagamara. Now, assuming that the cane is strong enough to be used for turning olives, and it's been designated for that purpose, then as far as Shabbos is concerned, it's not mukta. So that even though, in the case of a cane that's open on one end, and it doesn't have a kesher, we said that it's not makabel tumah, and it's not considered a kli. Nevertheless, as far as mukta is concerned, beinkach ubeinkach nita b'Shabbos, there's no iser mukta on Shabbos. And this really touches on the sugi that we learned before about the analogy between tumah v'tara and its susceptibility and the shame kli as far as tiltul mukta is concerned. So now let's talk about a kanish al zesim in terms of tumah v'tara is concerned. We said that im yesh kesher berosho, then it's makabel tumah. So the Gemara asks, "Amai pshute kli etzu?" The Torah says about wooden utensils. This cane is made of wood. That it's only makabel tumah if it has a receptacle. It has a kli kibul. And here we're talking about a cane. And a cane is a flat wooden utensil. It's certainly pshute kli etz. Is ain makabel tumah. If it's pshute kli etz, it doesn't have a receptacle, it's not makabel tumah. And therefore, when the Mishnah rules that if the cane has a knot at its end, it is makabel tumah, that's called yesh kesher berosho. Why is that so? It still is pshute kli etz. So the Gemara says, my taima, why is it that pshute kli etz are not makabel tumah? It's dumya desak me'inan, because in the parasha of the Torah mentions sak. So we need something that's domil a sak, which means it has a base kibul, a sackcloth which you wear on has a base kibul. So pshute kli etz is not similar to sak, and therefore it's not makabel tumah. And now the Torah, by giving us this equation between kli etz and sak, as far as tumah is concerned, it now disqualifies a pshute kli etz from kabbalas tumah. So now in the case of kanish al zesim, let's get back to our original question. If the Mishnah says, if it has berosho or kesher, it's mekabel tumah, why is that so? It's not, doesn't have a base kibul, it's pshute kli etz. So the Gemara answers Tana, based on a brisa, we can get a picture of our Mishnah. Mishmei de Rabbi Nechemia b'shoshem ahapik b'zeisim hofcho. When he's using this cane to turn the olives upside down, and the cane has a kesher berosho, then roebo, he can see in the halal, that opening in the rush, that through the kesher in the rush that plugs up this cane, is there still a halal left, you know, open space that's left in the cane? And perhaps what the Gemara has in mind here is what's called shemen azav min azesim, right? He's using this kli while the olives are being pressed, or to be pressed. So now, he leaves a little bit of a halal in the top part of the cane, and he's going to check the shemen. The shemen is going to somehow enter into this open space at the top of the cane, and he's going to check the mara shemen. He's going to see whether or not the shemen indicates that the olives already have matured, they ripened, and they're ready for being pressed in the olive press. So this kana that the Mishnah is referring to, it has a base kibul, which is meshavish lekabbalah, and therefore it's mekabel tumah. If it doesn't have a keshe barosho, then you're not able to check out the shemen, and it's kulol halal, and it has no base kibul, because it's open on its end. Anything you put into it is going to fall out. Then it comes under the category of pshutei kli eitz, and therefore it's not mekabel tumah. So that when he turns over the olives with the canes, and he inverts the cane in such a way that he can look at the end, he can examine the oil, because there's a cavity that is formed by the knot. That cavity makes it into a kli kibul. It's a receptacle for the oil. So I guess the knot is a little bit indented at the end of the cane, so that it forms a bit of a cavity, and when he inserts it into the vat to turn over the olives, some of the oil that comes out of the olives gets stuck in this cavity, and he's able now to determine whether it's ready for the pressing. So because the cane has this hollow, which is used now for containing oil, it becomes not pshute kli eitz, but rather a kli kabbalah. But if it has no knot, on the other hand, this cane is not being used to receive anything inside of it, no oil will remain in its hollow, and therefore it's pshutei kli eitz, it's not mekabel tumah. However, lenient Shabbos, the Mishnah says, bein sheyesh bo kesher v'rosh bein she'ein lo, it still remains a kli tashmish. And you still will use it on occasion to turn over the olives, even though you won't be able to check the olives, and therefore it's a kli, and therefore it's mutar b'tiltul. So whether or not you have a receptacle, that's not relevant to Shabbos. What's relevant to Shabbos is not whether it's this kind of a kli or that kind of a kli. Is it a kli kibul or is it a kli poshut? In any event, it's a kli. A kli is a kli, and therefore it's not muktzah. If it has some sort of capacity to be used, then even if it can't be used as a kli kibul, it still is a kli, and therefore it's not muktzah. And that leads us to the Mishnah here, the first Mishnah on Kuf Chaf Gimel Amid Beis. Actually, it's the second Mishnah of Rabbi Yossi. And we'll pick that up from Yitzchak tomorrow.